three of them. And so I was recalled in June of 66 and came up and my first start, I beat the Giants, I think 7-2 or 7-3 or something like that. But anyway, that from that time on, I stayed in the major leagues until my career ended in 82.
You had a lot of reserve duty obligations.
Yes, I did.
In the late 60s. Did those really hamper your...
Not really. They, you know, I sometimes I had to come back from the West Coast to have a weekend in on the East Coast. It was a weekend a month plus 2 weeks active duty in the summer, and that was usually down in Virginia. I was with a combat engineer battalion, and so we went to you know, whatever military unit does in the. With a 2 week active duty, and let's go down there and train. Barry Lurch was with me, and I believe Jerry Johnson also was. We brought our gloves, and we, after our duty was over during the day, we'd go out behind the mess tents and whatever, and we'd mark off what we thought of somewhere around 60 feet, 6 inches, and we'd be throwing out there. And the guys would gather around, and they'd watch us throw. We just tried to keep it some semblance of our. Of shape, you know, throwing the baseball. We were in excellent shape because the duty was tough, and we worked hard. But I mean, as far as throwing and everything, it was very, very crude because there was no mounds or anything, to say the least. But we just threw the baseball around and tried to be ready for, you know, when our duty was over there.
It would cost you starts here and there, though, right?
Sure it would. Sure. But we were young and we could adapt. It wasn't that difficult.
68 was the first year that you held out. Is that right? You had a long holdout into March that year.
Probably holding out for something like $2,500, $3,000. You bet.
It seems absurd to think about it now, doesn't it?
Sure,
the amounts of money that all
that's incredible. It's probably a week of meal money now. Probably one good road trip to meal money is close to what we were holding out for, but at that time, it was all relative. It was very important to me and my family.
Did you have, I mean, negotiations were real tough, weren't they? It seemed like almost every year for you.
Very one-sided. Not negotiation in the truest sense. It was take this or, you know, it's, what are you going to do? Well, they knew I loved my job, but I was determined, and I was going up against a man that had 50 years in the game and had all the leverage. And
this is Bob Carpenter, or
this is John Quinn.
John Quinn, excuse me. Yeah,
tough man, tough GM, but. It was very important to me. I had principles, and I had stats to back me up, too.
Yeah. Did you resent it at the time?
Sure, I was mad. Darn right.
When Marvin Miller asked the people to refrain from signing their contracts after 68, that it didn't bother you at all, did it? Probably.
Well, I was scared because I had no other line of work, and there's bills to pay, and the owners and general managers knew this. They had history on their side, antitrust laws, all this sort of stuff. They had everything, and we had our principles and our love for the game. And a right cause.
When did you become the player rep?
I'm not sure.
69 or 70?
Late 60s. That's close, 69.
Do you remember, were you the player rep that winter? Or was someone else?
I don't remember offhand. Usually what they, a lot of times, not that we were the smartest guys in the club, but because of the way, because we were starting pitchers and didn't have to and had more time, basically working every 5 days, and could give more time to the cause and to the running of the union. A lot of times pitchers, starting pitchers in particular, or pitchers in general, were picked.
Were you drafted for the job, or did you seek it?
I did not seek it, no. I was nominated. I was nominated, which was flattering. It was, I was kind of awestruck because I had, you know, I was very young. And
you're the youngest in the majors, according to my...
I didn't know that, but I was willing to try the best I could.
When did you meet Marvin Miller for the first time?
Well, it was a meeting, I believe, and when he came around the spring training basin. I think it was 66, if I'm not mistaken. Somewhere around there. The budding association at that time had gone out seeking a new representative for the union, and Marvin came around as to be introduced to the club, as he was introduced to the Phillies, and to have the players meet him and to get an idea of what this man might be able to do or not do for the association.
Jim Bunning was probably the player rep then. Did he have a lot of influence on your thinking about what Miller could do?
Sure. Jim Bunning had all the impact in the world on the players, and me in particular. I really admired Jim, still do for that matter, and very intelligent, intense, and calculating. I mean, he's not one to he thought things out. It wasn't a self-serving thing at all. And I had a lot of trust in his judgment.
Was it your idea or the Phillies for you to go to the Florida Instructional League after 68?
Phillies.
You'd gotten shelled somewhat that summer, right?
That's a succinct way of putting it. I didn't have a winning year. No, I struggled. I recall, sure. It was just, I was still young and still learning my trade. It wasn't, you know, did my best and just didn't come through that year. I still had, was in the learning process, learning the trade, and learning the art of pitching in Major League Baseball. 68, I was still like 22, 23 years old. But it still, but I've had 4 years in the big leagues already.
Going to Florida really helped, though, it seems, looking at your record. Because he had a much better year in 60.
Well, I don't know if that carries over from there. I mean, I learned some things, of course. I mean, I went down there to learn. I didn't go down there bitter. I didn't go down there to... I went down there to work. And because I had the problem of work, and because that was my business, and if I could do something to better myself, well, I always did it. But, yeah, I came back. I wouldn't say that you know, there's a time frame in there, that whether that carries over the next year, whether it's just my maturity or whether I use those things, who knows, whether I just pitch better.
It all accumulates.
Sure it does. I mean, there's no, you can pitch just as well, you can pitch poorly 1 year and win, you can pitch great and lose. It's not, I mean, it just, sometimes it's not how you pitch, it's when you pitch. Team scores more runs for you, team plays better for you. A lot of things, intangibles sometimes. I mean, consistency is what you're looking for. Consistency, day in, day out over the season. That's what all successful athletes strive for.
when the calendar year 69 started and the mass holdout was going on and the pension negotiations were going nowhere, and came time to report, were you worried that there wasn't going to be a season, or that you weren't going to get to pitch that year?
Indeed I was.
Well, everyone else in the country,
not to mention the player.
What do you remember about that February, as spring training time approached?
I didn't even know if I was going to go to spring training first. I didn't know whether to stay home, you know, or go down there and try to work out somewhere in the area and keep in shape. So there was a breakthrough in negotiations that would be able to move right in and pick up spring training at that point. But
Miller discouraged even that, though.
Pardon?
Miller discouraged.
Sure he did. Sure he did. He thought that the resolve of the players would lessen and be subject to a weakening position if they got down there and they became, you know, I mean, you're ready to go to work, spring training. That's a very special time in a ball player's life. And you thought that the guys...
No,
I'm still going.
I'm done.
So he thought that the players would weaken, basically. If they were down there, they would be tempted. Media pressure from the clubs, and the pressure from within themselves. That the result wouldn't be as great, and there might it might undo our resolve at that point.
Did you feel that way? Did you agree with them? Was it hard to put the union's unity ahead of your own?
It was very difficult. Very difficult. It would have been tough, real tough, if older players, if more established players had given in. I think the other players would have buckled. But this man, Miller, he was so calm in that, you know, in a troubled sea there, that he gave us confidence. And then the older players, too. If we don't do it now, we're never going to do it. We've got to take a stand somewhere for what we felt was right and what's been proved to be right many times over. Mm-hmm. And
were there other players you talked to that winter that helped keep the resolve strong?
I call them all the time. Right after the phone bill, I know that. In fact, some of the player reps would not go along with it. And that was difficult. And they, in turn, ended up reaping the rewards that the rest of us that stuck with it did. But I can't fault them for their...
I could.
I'm not going to mention names.
Okay.
But some of them couldn't take the pressure. They couldn't take it, and I can't blame them. But it was very difficult. But the majority were together, and that's all that counts, because we stuck together and things worked out.
The books that I've read that cover the general subject of the Players Association, such things, they generally gloss over 69 because a strike was averted. You know, the big confrontation didn't happen. I think it's important to look at it because it was the first time that many players showed unity. Do you see it as an emotional foundation that you were able to build from the Players Association?
Well, in retrospect, it'd have to be. That was the first stand, so to speak. Things were resolved to a degree by both parties. I think we finally had to sit down at a table. Well, that hadn't been done before, because before it was take or leave. And so in that respect, I think it was very prominent in what transpired that year and set the foundation for years to come.
What would have happened if someone other than Bowie Kuhn had been named commissioner? He came in and prevailed on the owners to negotiate in good faith. Suppose one of the hardliners had been in there and the owners had stonewalled you then.
That's kind of a moot question, isn't it?
No.
What if the Titanic didn't sail? It wouldn't have sunk. I don't know. I mean, that's hypothetical. Fortunately, I think that it's a commissioner that acted, quote-unquote, in the best interest of the game.
Miller says it's the only time.
Yeah, well, that might... Marvin's got a way with words, and they're usually right, but, I mean, there has to be some governing power that can bring parties together in a time of crisis to talk. There's always two sides of the coin. Mm-hmm. And before, there was only one. And it was time to flip that coin.
Yeah.
And to show, and to have it known that there are two sides, and we've got to sit down. Because the welfare of the wealth right here. The welfare of the
business. Salad, or would you like to keep it?
I'll just keep it on the side.
Okay.
Here. Thanks.
Can I have a Coke with no ice, please?
Sure.
Ooh, this looks wonderful. But the welfare of the game is inherently, the success and the overall health of the business depends on both sides, right? Understanding each other's problems and the ability to resolve problems that crop up within that structure.
And really, even though the antagonism is still there to a large degree on both sides have prospered.
I think immensely. Record attendance the last 5 years, and there might be another one this year.
Mm-hmm.
There's still problems, as there is in any business, an ongoing venture that changed from decade to decade.
Thank you. Were you, I think you probably must have been a player rep by the winter meetings in Puerto Rico. Remember going to Puerto Rico, that was in December of 69, and Kurt Flood's intention to file a lawsuit was discussed. What was your reaction to Flood's decision not to go to Philadelphia? Could you blame him for not wanting to go to Philadelphia, first of all?
Well, it wasn't the team. It could have been Timbuktu. Philadelphia just be a business hat and came and tried to acquire it. But it wasn't that. It was the fact that, I mean, as we all know now, it was a right to go to a place you wanted to go or not go. And to have that after you are not owned or subject to one team's whims for your entire career, or linked with a contract, and then, it's in perpetuity. And so, that was the issue. I remember it was extremely interesting that I mean, all of us thought, gee, this is quite a move on a very damn good ball player's part to kind of really rock the boat, if you will, and take a stand against an all powerful group of owners that that ran baseball.
Were you skeptical of his chances?
Only because of history. Because nothing, he set a precedent. And you could hope for something like that, but I mean, you'd have to have this thing run its course and just see what the laws of the land are. That's what it came down to. If it goes to the courts, it goes to the law of the land. And baseball was already exempt as an industry from what all the other industries in the country had to adhere to.
It's strange, in my research on it, I've read Oliver Wendell Holmes' decision from 1922, and the strange thing about it is that he just ruled that the fact that baseball teams cross state lines to play their games was only incidental. Which, in retrospect, seems very odd. Baseball, to him, was the equivalent of the Chautauqua Society, which had business offices in one place and simply sent out
representatives
to other parts of the country.
Interesting view.
Yeah. As if the spot...
How about that?
As if the games were just spontaneous exhibitions.
Mm-hmm. As if they didn't affect people's lives to a
right.
Huge degree. Linen, web, what is that? Yeah. That's, 70 years ago.
Yeah. And the exemption still holds.
Sure.
On the books, even though it's sort of moot at this point. I'm going to turn this off for a minute. Scheduling was one of the big concerns for players in the 60s, too.
We used to go on a 2-week road trip. I think nowadays, I think it's only something like 18 consecutive days or something without an off day or
something.
It has to be, but sure, schedule is very, very much. I mean, the quality of the play and the possibility of injury because of fatigue and stress and long hours and travel days and all that sort of stuff definitely is something to be considered.
That's something the fans really have no sympathy for.
No.
Conception of, right?
But we're fine.
Was that my friend?
No, I'm fine. Thanks. No, they have no idea. You know, they work during the day and then they want to come out and be entertained by the professional athletes. They have no idea what the players go through as far as traveling, airports and buses and hotel rooms.
They think the whole thing's a joyride.
They just show up and they expect to see a good effort. And the players want to give them a good effort. But we're not machines. And it's a long season starting in mid-February.